Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
Interesting choice of a title here on our show sheet, Curtis. It says, fact, the Mariners were one hit last night because Stacy didn't wear teal.
Oh, weird. You know, there maybe somebody could have done something about that.
Got to blame somebody. Got to do it.
Well, Bump wore like a little teal. It's an NBA logo. What hat are you wearing right now?
Lakers.
Quit trying to deflect, Stacy.
I'm not deflecting. It's not my fault that the Mariners had one hit against the Oakland A's last night. You know what that is?
Teal Tuesday, the high holiest of days.
Well, you know what that is.
Desecrated. You spat on the day by not wearing teal.
My teal sweater was in the laundry, and I forgot about it.
Wow.
You know what I tell my kids? You got to plan ahead. You knew it was Teal Tuesday.
I just forgot. I don't know what to tell you. And it, you know what? The Mariners forgot to learn how to hit is exactly what happened too. I mean, all of us made mistakes yesterday. Me, the Mariners, all of us. And I got to say, of all the teams to lose to, that's not one I'm super happy about seeing the Mariners lose to. One hit against the Oakland A's, a team that has essentially given up on its season. It's a shell of itself. You're playing in front of 15 people at the Oakland Coliseum. Like, this is horrible.
Yeah, not a good day for those guys. You're going up against Sears, who's got one win his last five outings. He hasn't been pitching well. You go into Oakland, you feel good. You got a big win against the Angels, and you say, okay, maybe the role players can step up and do what they have to do. You got Castillo on the mound, all is feeling good for a few innings, and then you just can't get the bats going.
No, that's it wasn't a good night at all. And, you know, I got to say, there was a very interesting stat, Curtis. I saw that you pulled this up. It was posted to the Mariners subreddit, though I'm sure the original source.
It was the baseball subreddit.
The baseball subreddit, okay. I'm sure the original source is, I don't know, I'll find out what
it is. From user Battle Pass,
okay,
whatever that can mean.
Perfect. Per user battle pass on the baseball subreddit. The Mariners have the best record of any wild card team against teams over 500. That's awesome. And it's like by quite a bit. However, they also have the worst record of any wild card team against teams below 500. Bump, make it make sense.
Only thing you can say is, you know, you say this in any level of competition. Some teams play down to their competition. Some teams play up to their competition. But right now, we can't ignore that guys are banged up. Guys are hurt. You don't have your bats in there. We spoke to Service. Service says, look, Bump, we don't give those speeches, win one for the Gipper every single week in baseball because there's 162 games, which I understand, but maybe it's time for a talk. Maybe it's time for the leaders to come together and just put some urgency on the situation. There's clearly urgency. These guys know there's 16 games left. You're third in the wild card, but you need guys to step up. And sometimes a little kick in the butt does that.
Now, I'm going to borrow sentiment from Luke Arkins, fantastic baseball analyst, who said that saying stuff like this is just how baseball works also kind of insults the intelligence of people who are watching. The problem with the Mariners is that their offense has been inconsistent all year long. That's not something where they're a fantastic World Series team. They're not the Dodgers having a bad outing where they fall to, I don't know, all the teams I'm immediately thinking of. Let's say they fall to the Rockies,
right?
That doesn't mean the Dodgers are a bad team. They're the best team in baseball right now. The Mariners, though, have shown through the entirety of the season that they're inconsistent on offense. Sometimes they could be great, and sometimes they look awful. And to say, like, well, you know, they're a great team. Sometimes, you know, ball just doesn't go your way. It ignores some real problems with this team. Now, one of them is something you can't fix right now, which is health. You're absolutely right. This isn't your star-studded lineup. This isn't your A lineup. This isn't your playoff lineup. You have Eugenio Suarez gone. You have Cal Raleigh, who's banged up. You just got Mitch Haniger back from lower back spasms. Julio was dealing with an injury and just got back. Ty's like just starting to look like he's okay again. You know what I mean? Like, you're dealing with stuff, and I get that. But so are other teams.
Yeah, okay. They're dealing with stuff. Other teams are dealing with stuff. But when you're elite and you're dealing with stuff, you feel like you always have guys who can pick up the slack. Like, there's so much pressure on the guys, 1 through 4 in that lineup, 1 through 5 even. And that's the reality of this team. You know, we've mentioned them being a good team. they are a good, solid, blue-collar type of team, right? So those blue-collar teams are going to struggle, especially when you don't have your guys in. And then the one thing that you can typically count on are the guys on the mound getting it done. And then Castillo goes out, he has his shortest outing of the year so far, 4 innings and 2/3. Like, you know, it's some stuff are just is out of your control when it comes to health. But you lean on your mental. You lean on your fundamentals. You lean on that clutch gene that we've seen every now and then. Santana's been the guy who's kind of been the clutch guy in these situations and just couldn't get it done yesterday. So I don't want to disrespect the, what you say, the average fan would say, this is how baseball is. Mm-hmm. This is how it goes. But with 162 games and you're a good team and your bats aren't out there and your pitching didn't get it done that night, this was bound to happen. So we'll see how they bounce back.
Let's figure out what the skipper had to say. Scott Servais and cut number one talked about this road trip, by the way, that you guys, they have dropped four of their last five. Three to the Angels, the most recent to the A's. Here's what Scott had to say in cut one.
We haven't had a good road trip. You know, we swung the bats pretty well yesterday. I thought we were ready to get out of it. You know, we had their starter on the ropes in the second inning, and we let him wiggle off, only getting the one run. So, you know, credit to him. He hung in there and ends up going five innings. But you know, you certainly need to do more offensively.
Now, how to do more offensively? Cut number three. Here's what Scott had to say.
When you don't hit, it looks like you're not trying. Mm-hmm. It really does. And then, you know, but you gotta find a way, create opportunities. And you need some guys. Obviously, we had some guys step up with big hits yesterday. It didn't happen today. And it's going to be some different guys. Can't be the same guys or guys every day. So it's where we're at. We haven't played great baseball on this trip. We know that. We're capable of playing much better. We have played much better, you know, throughout the course of the year. We need to stay with our plan, come ready to compete. Just compete. It doesn't really matter how your body feels at this point in the season. Nobody's going to be at 100%, but you got to show up, go out, and compete.
Now, to me, that doesn't sound like a manager who thinks, it didn't go our way. We got a little unlucky that day. He sounds like a manager who says, we can be better. I saw missed opportunities there, and it's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, he sounds like a disappointed father.
That's
like,
exactly what Dad Scott is back
right?
out.
Dad he
is,
Scott.
He is so heated. He's going to Home Depot to just kind of like take his mind off of it for a minute.
He's going for a walk in Home Depot with a coffee in his hand.
Yeah,
just browsing.
New Balance sneakers.
Yeah, he got some cargo shorts on. Yeah. Just trying to figure things
Someone
out.
Someone comes up to innocently ask if he needs help with anything, and he just unloads. He's like, you know what? I actually you know, do. Like I my, just need to talk to
my
someone.
My boys are really disappointing me right now. And yeah. I think that's the message that he needs to put out there and that the team needs to receive. Like sometimes coaches put messages out through the media. You know, growing up being a Lakers fan, Phil Jackson used to do that all the time. Whether you hate it or love it, it's going to be received. And he knows this team's personality. He knows how close they are. And maybe he feels this is what needs to be put out there. Put a little pressure on these guys. Let them know, like, look, we can't just mail this thing in and show up. Like, we have to be focused. We have to be locked in. And now, these role players, it's your time to shine. This is why you have, 23 guys on a roster. So when guys are out, someone steps up. So I'm all about, and this is what I love about sports, is that you get to see how teams respond and who are they really when things aren't going your way. It is so easy to dance and have fun when you're winning. Mm-hmm. All right, so now there's a bit of pressure now. 16, 17 games left. Your bats aren't going. You don't have all your guys in. What's the identity of this team? Can they bounce back and perform?
Now, they are banged up. Scott notes that, and they're going to be able to continue this series before they get back home. They're not out of the playoffs. They have ridiculous odds to make the playoffs. By all outward appearances, this team is going to be playing postseason baseball. Very on brand to make it as weird and tough and stressful as it could possibly be as we round out the final season here, you guys.
Yeah, I mean, why not? You know what? We asked for this, Stace.
I did, and I regret it. And now that I've asked for it, I regret it, and I want take backs. And I would like to immediately recant what I said about it being this very dramatic final series of the year. And I would like to go back to the series against the Texans, maybe on that Monday. Like I want to take back everything I said, and I would like to clinch a playoff spot and have a nice week of regular season games, just chilling. You know, just hanging out.
I feel you. It ain't right now though. That is not it. But here's the thing, though. They can still get it done against the A's, right? How many more games? Got two more games left against these guys. If they win both of these games, okay, then the vibes are back on point. It's all about holding on as tight as you can until Swatters gets back, because now we're starting to realize just how important he was for the team. Now, we knew he was important, right? Leading the team in home runs, the energy that he brings in the dugout. But we're seeing the effects of not having, of course, a lot of your guys in, but especially Suarez, man. He seems like he's the guy who keeps the team focused and not tensed up in moments like these.
From the 509 on the Mac and Jack's text line, join this conversation anytime, by the way. I can't handle a one and done, Stacy. One playoff series is not the playoffs in my book. Now, I'm counting it as the playoffs. If they make the wild card series,
it's the playoffs.
It counts, but I hear what you're saying, 509, as far as, like, I've waited this long. I want to see them be competitive. I want to see them give me hope. And there are times when you see this Mariners team and you think they could hang with anyone. Are they going to win consistently against the Dodgers? I mean, they wouldn't be facing them in the playoffs until the World Series. But are they going to win consistently against some of the league's best teams? No, probably not. Could they take a game or two with this starting rotation? Yeah. With this bullpen? Yeah. With, I mean, the defense as it was and being able to play pretty clean baseball? Yeah, they could. If the offense gets going, all of a sudden that is a really tough team to beat. And the problem is that that offense has not got going, that the defense has made a few mistakes. And that at least last night, your starting rotation, the best arm in your starting rotation, just didn't have his very best stuff late.
Yeah, it's the second time this year I think we can say that Castillo didn't have his best out there. But here's the thing. You just want this team to have a fighting chance, right? Get into the playoffs, you never know what's going to happen. You're going to put your money on these teams with great pitching and all these bats and who spend more money on their players. All you want is a chance. You haven't been in the playoffs in 21 years. So to people who are saying that, oh, I want more, I mean, beggars can't be choosers at this point. Just support this team and get in, and let's see what happens. Because if this team were to get into the playoffs, which we're hoping that they are, all right, their last regular season game is October 5th. Suarez should be back by then. I mean, hopefully that finger feels good and guys are getting healthy. Kyle feels better. France is finding his groove. Julio's had enough time to work back into good health. So there's time. But you do feel a bit pressure now.
Now, there's a little bit of a beggars can't be choosers thing about this season in particular, but why can't Mariners fans say, no, I would like a World Series team, please?
That's not realistic.
Not realistic for this year, but
yeah,
start building towards next year, start building towards the year after that. Like, I think it is completely fair for the Mariners to look at this organization after the season. They're not a World Series team this year. To look at this organization after the season and say, I want to see a World Series team.
Yeah, and I think they've shown this year that they're moving in that direction, right? You pick up Robbie, you got Castillo. Suarez has been a huge pickup. Kyle Raleigh's coming around. He's young. He's only going to get better. You got Julio. I mean, there are some pieces. There's a core like five or six right now that you can say, okay, these are the pillars to making this team a World Series team. It's not going to happen by the end of this season. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to happen by the beginning of next season. It's a slow progression. It's a marathon. But pieces are in place to at least make you feel, at least I feel like, they're moving in that direction.
All right, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, Canada will reportedly reopen their borders to travelers not vaccinated against COVID beginning on September 30th. What's the real headline?
And open their borders to a certain left-handed starting pitcher.
Thank goodness. Thank
just saying.
Goodness. I wonder who you could be talking about.
I don't know, guys. All I'm saying is that that top three part of the rotation you're looking at for the Mariners suddenly feels a little more like a sure thing should you have to travel to Toronto.
We'll give you a hint. Tight pants.
I'll give you a hint. It's Robbie Ray.
Oh.
So he will thankfully be able to play for Seattle. Should they end up going to Toronto? Now, we say that, but we talked about some playoff scenarios the other day, Bump. What one, after talking with Shannon, after we debated about it, what is the ideal playoff scenario versus hosting something, going to play Cleveland, or potentially needing to play Toronto or the Blue Jays?
Ideal would be going to play Cleveland, right? Even though they've been playing good baseball as of late. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I prefer them to have games at home just to give the fans something to cheer about. You know what I mean? I, I understand. I don't feel like this team is a World Series team right now. So I'm thinking about the fans. I'm thinking about the people who have been here for 20, 21 years supporting this team day in and day out. Give them something more to cheer about. But, I mean, I guess ideally be on the road going to Cleveland because you feel like you can handle them.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Aaron Judge last night making history, hitting his 60th home run of the season. Here's what that sounded like.
Here's the 3-1. Drill deep to left field. There it goes. Number 60. Slide over, babe. You've got some company. Aaron James Judge has tied George Herman Babe Ruth with 60 home runs.
He's the first player to do that since 2001. What's the real headline?
He's also the first player to do it without facing steroid allegations.
Yeah, no whispers over there with Aaron James Judge. You know, he's shopping at Whole Foods. He's getting free-range chicken, grass-fed cows. You know what I'm saying? He's doing it all natural. And that's fun, man. I enjoyed watching all that go down in 98, 99, 2000, hitting all these bombs as a kid, not even realizing that, why is Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa so swole? You know, then news comes out that they've been using PED. So it's nice to see somebody do it naturally, and he's just a big human being. What we looked him up, he's 6'7", 280.
280. That's bigger than a tight end.
280, and he's playing in center field a lot of the time.
Goodness gracious.
I'm having, now all respect due to the text line, but the 206 says, can't wait to see what a World Series team looks like then, because I said the Mariners aren't a World Series team this year. I said it looks like the Dodgers and the Astros. I think that you can have beaten a team, you can have beaten the Braves in a series, actually, taken the series against the Braves. Guys, I think that it's important to point out the talent difference and the need to improve and the space to improve between the Mariners and other teams because you want them to get there. I don't want the Mariners front office to look at the way this team is constructed right now and say, yep, no more additions, changes, we are set, let's enter next year with the same group. I would love for the Mariners to prove me wrong, but what I want even more is for the Mariners to prove me right so that they enter the offseason and say, we need to upgrade at second base or shortstop. We need to go get like a really great left fielder. We need to get another bat, another great bat, right? Like you want to see them make those improvements, and you can beat those teams once in a while, but the talent gap is there. Look at the stats. You want the Mariners to have those stats.
Yeah, you want the Mariners to be able to go into anybody's house during the playoffs and feel like they can compete, right? It's different when you're competing in June and July, you know, middle of the season. You know, you're, 60, 70 games in. There's something different when more is on the line, when there's mist in the air, it's fall, you know what I mean? The stadium is packed. Every pitch means a bit more. So, yeah, I'm with you, Stace. It's all about improvement. Now, we didn't think they did enough this offseason, right?
No.
We didn't think Robbie Ray and Adam Frazier and Suarez and Winker
I would have liked
enough.
To see them do something different at second base still.
Yeah, still.
No, I don't mean anything personally against any of these players, but...
No, but... End of the day, they got something out of it, you know.
For sure.
Suarez is playing
phenomenally.
Robbie Ray has had his ups and downs.
Yeah. Castillo has been amazing.
Castillo's been amazing. They're going to make their money in the playoffs. We're going to see Robbie in the playoffs. That's where you're going to get a return on your investment.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, Geno Smith has filed a trademark for his quote, "They wrote me off. I ain't right back, though." Following the Seahawks week one win over the Broncos, what's the real headline?
Unfortunately, since halftime of that game, the end zone hasn't written back either.
Left them on red, huh?
Yeah, the end zone. It's been a while.
It's been a while. Good for Geno for copyrighting that. I mean, because that was off the dome, too. That was pretty good in the moment for him to do that.
As you would say.
Pretty good in the moment.
Bars.
All right, good for you, Geno.
You know, Drake saw that and was like, oof.
Now Drake's got to pay royalties if he wants to use
exactly.
it.
Yeah, exactly. Good luck.
Drake is definitely using that one.
Good luck, Aubrey.
But yeah, we need the end zone to right back. You know what I mean? And I hope it gets going this weekend against the Atlanta Falcons. Pete Carroll has said, look, he wants Geno to be able to push the ball down the field more. Now, people are yelling and hooting and hollering at Geno for not throwing it down the field more. He doesn't call the plays, folks. You know what I'm saying? So you have to take that into consideration. So hopefully this week we see this game plan a little bit more wide open and that end zone and him are having great conversations.
What's the most either frustrating or just common misconception you think people have about this team 2 weeks into the season?
That Geno is in control of the offense's destiny. Their you're mad that he's taking the check down in the high percentage throws. If you look at the play calling, that's where his read is taking him. And then defensively, I think people are writing them off right now. I think that you have to understand that Clint Hurd, this is his first year as a D coordinator. I guarantee you he's watched the most film this week than he's watched in any other week of his life as a coach, because when you get pushed around like that, and Clint Hurd is an in-the-box, in-the-trenches type of guy, you're going to have to find ways to get your team going. So I wouldn't write off the defense quite yet, and I wouldn't put as much responsibility on Geno Smith for these short throws.
I think that every time you talk about it, I'm not surprised you went play calling, because I think that's where I automatically go. I think that it is completely normal to see an offense and say the quarterback isn't doing enough. The quarterback has the ball in his hands, with the exception of two wildcat plays, to start every play, right? The offense flows through the quarterback, and that's how Pete Carroll wants it. That's how it is for every single team. The offense flows through the quarterback. But not every quarterback, A, gets the freedom that like a Tom Brady or Peyton Manning did to be able to audible into whatever you want, audible out of whatever you want, right? Like, any young player or a new starter or, you know, a starter that's picking up a new offense with a new coordinator, whatever it is, you're going to have them work with the coordinator, and it's going to be the coordinator's say or the head coach's say. I think that's a good one, because I think people see this offense and they think, man, if Drew Lock was out there, this would be different. Like, maybe. I felt that Drew Lock was a more electric player in the preseason.
Yeah.
Do I think that Drew Lock is the answer for this team? Right now, I don't know.
No.
I think the answer is being a little more creative with your play calling,
yeah,
like you've said.
And I also think that as the season goes along, Geno will gain more trust from Shane, and Shane will develop ways to allow Geno to push the ball down the field. It's a relationship, man. It's a working relationship.
Yeah. All right. KJ Wright has the KJ Wright Show every single Wednesday on Brock and Salk. Fascinating conversation this morning, but he said something especially interesting. It was something we were all worried. We talked about heading into week two. We talked about being worried that it would happen. There's something KJ saw and something he heard to make him think, you know what? Something that we were all worried about was right, that we were right to be worried about it. Let's see if they can fix it before week three. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
I forgot to tell you guys, Michael Bumpus and myself are live from Virginia Mason Athletic Center. We are getting ready to kick off the huddle. All Seahawks getting you ready for week three. That starts at noon. We're going to have player guests, a bunch of analysts, really good stuff. Before we get to it, though, let's get back to something that already happened. That was KJ Wright's interview this morning for the KJ Wright Show. He said something really interesting. Let's take a listen to some of what KJ had to say.
I was livid on Sunday. I was very, very upset. And when you look at the game, last week I said, out of all the years Coach Carroll has coached the Seattle football team, this year he has got to be on point. And when I watched Coach Carroll last week, I felt like last week when he played the Broncos, he took that game very personal. I felt like he made that game about Coach Carroll. And internally, when you make the game personal, when you make it about Coach Carroll, what happens when you win that game? You take a big sigh of relief, like, ah, I did it. And internally, when I looked at that football team, I looked at a football team that felt like they arrived. I felt like a good team that they made it. And when I looked at them, they weren't physically ready. Mentally, they were not there. And I felt like, Coach Carroll, you've been around this for a long time, right? You cannot put that message out, talking about validation, talking about all the former players, because internally, your team hears that. And I felt like when you turn on the tape on Sunday, you saw a team that was not ready to go.
Yeah. So KJ Wright is pretty much saying that the team followed the leadership of Pete Carroll. And I think we have to remember that Pete Carroll is a human being. You think that didn't mean anything that Pete Carroll beating Russell Wilson and Denver on Monday Night Football? And then as a team, you do have to enjoy that moment, be in that moment, but you have to be able to flip that switch and come back to work on a Tuesday or Wednesday, like most teams do. But let's talk about the makeup of this team. There's no more KJ, Bobby, Earl, Russell, all these veterans who have been through these battles. I would love to go back to like 2013 and 14, maybe even 2012, and see what the response was like for this team after they win a game that no one expected them to win, or just win a big game. That's part of growth as an organization, as a team. So Pete Carroll's been through this several times as a head coach in the collegiate level and in the NFL. So I guarantee the message was delivered correctly. I think it lies more on just the young nature of this team and never being in that moment before. And you kind of have to feel like you have arrived a little bit. I mean, shoot, you won on Monday Night Football and no one had you winning that game. Now it's about waking up the next morning, putting on the film, having that Tell the Truth Tuesday, I guess, that week as a player on Monday Night Football, and moving forward with the same hunger and desire that you had during camp and before that game. It's a young team, man, and this is a different challenge for Pete Carroll because he hasn't had a young team like this in a while.
It's the hunger that I was thinking of. What's interesting is this is a team that no one expects to be good. No one outside of Seattle, and many people in Seattle, do not expect this team to be good. That includes the defense. And I wonder if, for KJ Wright, he knows, and I believe him here, but I wonder if he knows that part of the recipe for what made that defense so spectacular mm-hmm. when he was here, in addition to Hall of Fame caliber talent, in a scheme that they just worked really well with, was this idea that they were written off, and this idea that they were hungry, and they were ready to prove people wrong, and they were playing together. And it's playing together and then that kind of hunger that is really hard to create artificially.
Yeah.
They just had it. Like, they just had that. And I wonder if this team does. It's interesting because, like I said, a team that no one believes in, and yet I wonder if they have a kind of hunger and a kind of desire to play for each other that they did for the Super Bowl team. I'm not saying they don't, but mm-hmm. I'm saying that I think that that's what KJ wants to see.
Yeah. And KJ, I mean, KJ and that group was something special. Like, you had guys who were just straight out dogs who wanted this, mm-hmm. who were written off, counted out, all that stuff you can say, right? And you can look at this group and say, all right, these guys are in the same situation. No one really believes in them, but every team is different. You know, it might have taken them getting out physicaled and outplayed by the San Francisco 49ers to be like, all right, we ain't done nothing yet. All right, fellas, like, we have to come together in this meeting room when they get into the big auditorium and have that talk in these side conversations in the locker rooms and on the sidelines and say, okay, we thought we were something that we weren't, but that doesn't mean we can't achieve a whole bunch of things. The football season is a long season, and you will be tested mentally and physically. And I think within the first 2 weeks, man, they've learned so much about themselves. The coaches have and the players have. You play against a finesse team with a good run game, like you mentioned, with Javonte Williams, and then you play against a team that's just going to punch you in the mouth and challenge you. Who are you now? You know, what's the response going to be like against the Atlanta Falcons? Because I'll talk about in four down territory. The Atlanta Falcons do some things. They're not the Broncos. They're not the 49ers. They do some things. So it's they're learning a lot right now. Mm-hmm. And it's all about being honest and getting back to that hunger and that desire to be great.
Is there anything unique you think? Clearly there is, but from what you can see from the outside, anything unique about coaching for Pete Carroll, this group versus that great defense? Because both have guys that are undervalued.
Yep.
Both have guys that are underestimated. The players are different. I wonder what you think about the unique difficulties that this season presents Carroll.
Well, I think offensively the uniqueness is Carroll. The situation with Russell Wilson was that Russell was Carroll's guy. You have what, Matt Flynn over here at the time, mm-hmm. getting paid $10 million, and you have this kid on the bench, and you're saying, okay, that's my guy. The quarterback situation is different. You're not building with Geno Smith. You're kind of, okay, let's get through this and see what happens. Towards with Russell, you're building. And then you look at a defense, and you had a defense that, and Pete Carroll said this before, he goes, look, it's not like we've never ran a 3-4 before, right? He goes, look, I've been around the game a long time. We've done 3-4 and 4-3, but his bread and butter was that 4-3 cover 3. There's some change going on, right? I think even in a sense, Pete Carroll is learning as well as a head coach because this is a different situation schematically, and you got a first-time coordinator. You have a second-time offensive coordinator. You bring in a guy like Desai. There's so much change going around Pete Carroll that I think he's learning as well, and I think he'll say that too, man. It's like you never know everything in football. As soon as you think you know everything, you might as well quit, hang up the cleats, and stop coaching because the game is always evolving. So I think that 10, 12 years ago, he had such a solid foundation of what he was doing. and the pieces to do it, it was just like clockwork, man. I've been doing this for years. Towards now, I mean, the game has changed in 10, 12 years. The league has changed, right? They're throwing the ball more. Different type of athletes. You look at the tight end position alone, and you look at the top tight end in the league now, back in 10, 12 years ago, they're totally different players, right? You're seeing more nickel. So the game is evolving, and he's dealing with some young guys. And, you know, the only coach to ever go 20 years without a hiccup, really, is Bill Belichick. And that's because he had the goat at quarterback. So this is and I'm sure Pete embraces this, man. I mean, this is a challenge. If it was easy, if everything was easy in football, I don't think Pete would do it. He loves a challenge.
I know. The last thing I think I was wondering from the interview, I don't have sound on it. This was a bit later in the interview, so I didn't have time to go find this, but did you listen to the entirety of the KJ Wright Show?
Yep.
You guys can find this on seattlesports.com, by the way, in the podcast section. Fantastic show. KJ is an amazing host. A bit later when he was talking about the linebackers in particular, what he said about Daryl Taylor was interesting to me, because Daryl Taylor, all the expectation and hope in the world, and he said, like, when he's in that Leo spot, it feels like it might be easier. All you have to do is you got one job.
Mm-hmm.
This defense might actually suit him better. But it's a change. How's it a change for the backers?
It's just more responsibility. You know what I'm saying? You're walking up to the line of scrimmage. You're playing from depth. There's just more to worry about, right? And then, especially when you're playing from depth at that linebacker spot, and say the runs to your side, you have contained. It's so easy to try to take the easy route, which is inside the tackle, in between the guard, and then bend around and try to make that play. Now, I've seen great linebackers do it. It's a roll of the dice, right? Because if you don't make that tackle, that play, it's going to bounce outside of you. Now you got your corner who's in coverage with his back to the play. Big runs are liable to happen. So it's all about just realizing where you fit in this defense and knowing your responsibilities and knowing that you might not make the play, but you're making a play because you're doing your job and forcing the runs back inside to where all your help is. So a guy like Daryl Taylor who wants to make a play, and that's the thing, man. You don't want to be pushing a guy forward, say, I need you to make a play. If anything, you want to be able to pull him back and say, all right, calm down just a little bit, do your job, and the players are going to come to you. So that's one thing you don't want to take away from Daryl Taylor, but he's young, man. It's really on his second year in the league. Yes, he's been in the league 3 years, but last year was his first time playing. It's his second year in the league. So there's a lot of learning and teaching that's been going on this year.
All right, you can find the KJ Wright Show podcast at up on seattlesports.com. We're gonna go back-to-back college football here. We aren't looking outside the Pac-12 though, but we got two different Pac-12 conversations coming up at 11. We're gonna bring on Yogi Roth of Pac-12 Network, a friend of the show, great guy. He's gonna talk to us specifically about the Washington Huskies. We'll see if we can get a Coug question in there too as well. Before then though, we've got new information from George Kliavkov on the potential future media rights deals for the Pac-12. So we're gonna look at kind of the business side of things, and I'm making that sound boring, but what we're going to do is talk about some very, very important conversations with the health of this conference. It's really important. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Really interesting sound from George Kliavtoff, Pac-12 commissioner. He was on with John Wilner and John Canzano for Canzano and Wilner, the podcast. George talking about essentially the future of the Pac-12. And we know, Bump, that one of the big issues with the Pac-12, in addition to all kinds of geographical difficulties, was the media rights deal that Larry's got established. And in all the troubles that presented, and the problems with access, right? And the problems with viewership that presented. So that's a huge, huge priority. I would probably guess priority number one for this conference moving forward is to figure out a media rights deal that works out, that brings in more access, that makes it easier to watch these games and puts these games and these talented athletes in front of the eyeballs of scouts and NFL teams and viewers and college football playoff voters. So let's get to some of what George had to say. We're going to start just in order here. Let's go cut number four. This is Kliavkov talking about what he thinks the 10 remaining schools can do together.
I think the 10 schools will sign a grant of rights agreement if we put the right agreement in front of them, which is why we're spending so much time focused on getting an agreement that will allow all of our schools not just to compete but to thrive.
And he's talking about furthermore some of the difficulties that he's inherited. Cut number five, this is why George says that negotiations are especially complicated.
These are difficult, complicated negotiations that are kind of the core of the future of the revenue opportunity for our schools and are really, really important to get right. And, you know, we inherited some contracts that have in them some peculiarities with respect to pick times and order of picks and, you know, who gets what games. And they have some exclusive negotiating periods associated with them. And we're just working through all of that. And it's not easy work. But I would say, you know, it'll happen in the near future. I don't want to get more specific than that.
Now, he's right in that he inherited a sticky situation.
I guarantee you did.
I know. And I know that sometimes, like, the business talk of the Pac-12 and the business talk of Pac-12 media stuff can feel kind of boring, but why is it so especially important?
It's important because this is the business side of things. I think for us people, the consumers, we look at this thing going down and say, why don't you just sign a deal, something similar to the Big Ten, and get your money there? But he mentioned he inherited some contracts. Now, to break contracts, breach contracts, man, there's a lot of stuff that needs to go down, and you need to find loopholes, and you need to, it's not just Klickhoff sitting down and saying, okay, guys, we need to do this. There's lawyers involved. There's accountants involved. Like, there's a big production. I imagine them just sitting in a room in San Francisco with, like, a big table with 20 people sitting there.
Ooh, probably some good bagels.
You know, great bagels, good coffee.
Yeah.
And they're in there for hours just trying to figure out how to get out of certain contracts that were probably in place for the next 3 or 4 years. That's what makes this thing so difficult. So we have to be patient, even though it's hard to be patient, because you see everybody else making moves. You're like, all right, come on, Pac-10. ESPN is sitting there waiting for you. Why not make a move now?
All right, what are the two most annoying things for most Pac-12 viewers? Well, it's going to be, how can I watch the game? And also, why do I have to wait until 7:30 to watch this game? Well, cut number eight, George saying that those are the two biggest factors in a new deal.
Certainly revenue is at the top of the priority list, but we have to also balance that against distribution, right? We really want our content to be available to any of our fans who want to see it. I've set a goal of, you know, our content should be available on any piece of glass connected to the internet as part of our next media rights negotiation. And by the way, that might mean that you need to subscribe to a service. It doesn't mean you'll get it for free, but it has to be available everywhere. And then the last is figuring out a set of media rights deals that allows us to have a little bit more flexibility with respect to scheduling our games.
The accessibility is the biggest thing to me.
Yeah.
I live 10 minutes driving from the university or from Husky Stadium. And half the time, because I don't have cable, many people I know don't have cable. You just buy a bunch of streaming services. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible to find the game half the time, unless it's, you know, Michigan State and UW was on cable. But otherwise, it's, when something's exclusively on Pac-12 Network, I'm going to be really honest.
It's tough.
I know you covered these games for Pac-12 Network, and it does have great coverage, but it is, I think that the changing media landscape is that people, frankly, don't have cable packages.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd say out of my circle of 5 or 6 really good friends, I don't think any of us have cable. We just don't have cable. We stream everything, and imagine being Washington State. It's so hard to find a Washington State game, you know what I mean? Because we're not going to be on primetime unless we're playing Oregon, who's ranked. Maybe this weekend we will be, or UW, who's ranked. It hurts more for the underdogs. At least sometimes locally with UW, they'll be on ABC or something like that. You can turn on your streaming service and find it that way. But it's all about making it easy for the nation to see your talent. Now, I covered the UCLA game with Yogi and those guys on Saturday. And I grew up going to UCLA games, and I walk into the stadium. There's like 20,000 people there. It's at 80,000. It can seat 80,000 people. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, man, what is going on here? You know what I'm saying? Like, people aren't coming to these games. People aren't watching these games. And then we're wondering why our talent is going to the Big Ten. Are they going to the SEC? Are they going to these other conferences? Because everything about the Pac-12 right now seems so difficult to access. You should be able to flip up your laptop, push a button, and boom, you're going to be able to see these guys. So, but then the Pac-12, they have to maneuver in a way that it's profitable for them as well. So that's why it gets complicated, right? Because you hear Klickhoff talk. He goes, look, we got to make sure everybody sees the games, but we also have to make sure it's profitable for the Pac-12 in general, because you want this money to go back into these universities. That's why this whole thing is so complicated. But because we've been in such a dark place for 8 years now, mm-hmm. imagine how hard it is for him to dig – this conference out of this hole that they're in. It's a tough deal, man. Thanks, Larry.
Semi-related, Curtis, did listening, I know we have to go, but did listening to any of what George had to say on Canzano and Wilner, the podcast, anger you even more about Larry, Scott? Because I know that you despise him.
Anything that people say about like that era of the Pac-12 just angers me so much, because if it wasn't for that era, we wouldn't be in this situation where you've got the two biggest nationally known schools in the conference already with one foot out the door and just kind of counting down the days until they can leave.
Yeah. All right, you guys, from what's happening in the conference room right now with the commissioner of the Pac-12, we're going to jump to what's happening on the field. That was Washington beating Michigan State, and also Wazoo.
Yeah.
Getting in there, yeah. Probably deserves some top 25 recognition. Let's ask Yogi what he thinks. Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network joins us next.